Get off of my cloud. Hey, True Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We just finished video recording the next, what's it called, Kathy? Malloy reads his obnoxious half-witted email segment that goes up on the website for members only. Founding members, if you are a founding member and you want to watch this, the new one will be up when? Tomorrow? Tomorrow or Friday? I'll bet it's up tomorrow. So you can check that out if you like. So here we are for the Wednesday night edition of the Malloy program. We have Bridget's Talking Stick Circle tonight, which will come up later. And what else we got? What happened today? Anything happened today? Are you aware of anything that happened? We also have a segment that we have lifted off of the Situation Room, a CNN Situation Room. We want to play for you an interview with Jane Meyer. Runs about, what, 5 minutes? About 5 minutes. The former German U-boat commander, Wolf Blitzer, interviews Meyer about her new book, The Dark Side, which I think you'll find very interesting. Are we allowed to do that? Can we just take somebody else's copyrighted material and put it on this program? I guess so. It happens to me all the time. Of course, I'm not Wolf Blitzer. But anyway, we're going to do that for you tonight. What else we got? Some poker, if you're into it. I guess that's about it. Got some emails here. I like that. This came in late today, and I just love this. It's an email about a certain niche market in the U.S. economy that is declining. And this comes from Earl. And Earl writes, Mike, if you get into an economic discussion tonight, here's a striking indicator of how far up the income scale the economy is, quote, feeling the pinch, end quote. The first day's figures at the July select yearling sale in Kentucky show a 23% decline in gross sales, with the average of $92,289 being down 10% and the median of $75,000 down 6%. These are for one-year-old thoroughbreds with at least 9 months to go before ever racing. As the name select indicates, they have to pass serious pedigree and conformational scrutiny to be cataloged at this venue. Likewise, to be able to play in this market, one has to have some serious discretionary income. Okay, well, thanks, Earl. Ah, son of a bitch. Well, Kathy, that's it. We're not buying a racehorse this year. Even though the prices are down 10%, the median down 6%. I read something the other day, though, that luxury yacht sales are off the chart. Up, not down. Thoroughbred. So there you go. From Diana in Florida, regarding the New Yorker cover, Mike, she writes, what I want to see on the next New Yorker cover is Cindy McCain dolled up like Marie Antoinette and John McCain in a little boy sailor suit with a face that looks like an aged Alfred E. Newman in her hands, credit cards and a beer can stuffed with money in his hands, toy weapons and a 19th century world globe, plus some S&M paraphernalia kicked behind him on the floor. Diana in Florida. Ow, Diana! Okay. What else we got? This is from Marla in Ontario, Canada. I listen to you and one other serious host for my news source, Michelangelo Signorelli on OutQ Radio. I have given up on CNN, ABC, etc. for truthful information. Last week, as I ride home from work, I tuned into the remaining minutes of Michelangelo's show and heard him exclaim about Karl Rove having fled the country to avoid testifying before Congress. Rove's people used the excuse he had had previous plans to travel and was therefore exempt from appearing before the House committee at that time. I guess he had claimed executive privilege before as well. Michelangelo surmised he may have fled to Argentina and might not ever return. To me, this is breaking news. And I broke down once on the weekend and checked CNN. No coverage. Duh. Is there any truth to the original story? Thanks if you can comment. Sincerely, Marla. Look, anything that Michelangelo Signorelli puts out there has got to be gospel. He's one of my favorite writers. I have to admit, I didn't know he had his own program. Oh, yeah, I knew that. That's right, I did know that. He had his own program on Sirius. I love the way he writes, always have. So if he said it was true. As far as fleeing to Argentina, he probably fled where Rush Limbaugh goes, to the Dominican Republic, so he could have sex with underage children. But I don't know. As far as his never returning, no. But Jane Meyer, in her interview that we're going to play for you a little bit later tonight with former German U-boat commander Wolf Blitzer, makes it very clear that these scum, including Rove, are risking a lot if they travel to certain countries that may decide to adhere to the Nuremberg war trials conclusions that occurred in 48 and 49, and arrest them and jail them and try them for war crimes. One can hope. So, sorry I don't have a more complete answer for you there, Marla, but... I tried. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the inflation numbers out today got everyone's attention, worst we've had since Carter was president. The unjiggered numbers are, of course, far worse than anything from the Carter years. The corporate networks trotted out their business news reporters to say things are gloomy, but not as bad as the 70s, and certainly nothing like the 30s. Well, the reality is much different. In the 70s, we were still the world's biggest exporter and the world's biggest creditor nation. We still produced 85% of our own oil. The dollar was the world's strongest currency. Unemployment at its worst was about 8%. Consumer debt was a small fraction of what it is now. And back then, we had a positive savings rate, not a negative. Today's numbers for all these things not only don't compare favorably with 1978... they don't compare favorably with 1932. The production of everything we need to live has been shifted to China. If imports stopped and China would have no reason to keep supplying us after the dollar's collapse, things will change dramatically. Take going to the doctor, for example. No surgical masks, syringes, scalpels, gloves, gowns, scrubs, drugs, parts for those mysterious machines that go beep, beep, and on and on. Not that you'll be able to get there if it's further than you can walk. The Great Depression of the 30s was, by comparison, a picnic and easy to fix. The neocons are shooting for something out of Dickens, but we may get something out of Mad Max, or whatever libertarians call paradise. Every man for himself, scrounging for canned goods and gasoline. Shave your head and start wearing leather. from Prairie 2. You know, I wish the people who wrote the scum suck mail were as one-tenth as creative or could spell as well as you folks who are not from the scum suck, right? Speaking of financial situations, and I'm not going to dwell on a whole lot tonight, but Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said last night that, Sunday night, that oil prices could hit $300 a barrel if... U.S. oil company ExxonMobil again freezes Venezuelan assets in a dispute over ExxonMobil wanting to steal all of Venezuela's oil. Exxon won a court order freezing $12 billion in assets held by Venezuela's state oil company after that nation took over a multi-billion dollar oil project. And, of course, that heightened tensions with the U.S. and helped to raise the oil prices. You wonder why we're paying, what, it went down today, $4? Oh, hey, what are we down to now, 140? Hey, that's wonderful, 136? Anyway, a London court later overturned Exxon's temporary freeze on Venezuela's assets, but Chavez said the company could seek further action against Venezuela. That's the way to do it, you rapacious sons of bitches. ExxonMobil, $12 billion. What is that, 1 month's profit? Freeze the assets, screw around with Hugo Chavez, pull more oil off the market, and then watch the price go to, oh, I don't know what. Ah, $300 a barrel. We'll be back after the break. Babylon, don't make our rules. I'm feeling like a voice is on 21 past the hour. The inflation numbers that Prairie 2 is referring to, according to, according to who. This is the British press. U.S. inflation climbed at the fastest rate since 1982, and soaring food and fuel costs poured more misery on American households struggling amid the credit crunch. That's the lead in this article in the Telegraph of the U.K. An annual inflation rate up to 5% now from 4.2%. Jesus, but we're not in a recession. We are not. All you have to do is just flip on your Wayback, or not Wayback, just yesterday machine, and take a look at some of the garbage George Bush. Matter of fact, we had two of his half-witted comments last night about,
things are tough. Well, the way to do it is to cut your air conditioning down.
Cut it down. Cut it down. What an expression. Where'd that come? Well, that's strictly Southern.
You got to cut that sucker off or cut it down a little bit. Can you cut that on? Cut it down.
I'm kind of hung up on the Southern thing tonight because the blog I wrote for NovemRadio.com today had to do with whether or not Jesse Helms is in hell. And I kind of slipped into the white Southern redneck vernacular in writing the blog today. You can see it whether you're a member or not. Just go to NovemRadio.com. And then, what's his name? Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura was on Larry King last night. I thought he was going to announce that he's going to run for the Senate, which would have immediately ended Al Franken's nascent political career, slam right into the commode. But he didn't do it. He said that he would not be running for the U.S. Senate. That's a shame. But in that interview, sound for which we do not have, we can only steal so much from CNN every given program, and we've already stolen about 5 minutes tonight, which we'll play for you coming back here. But Jesse slammed the weak dollar policy as part of a war being waged on the middle class in America by the U.S. government. Not by the U.S. government, Jesse, by Republicans. God damn it, get it straight. Come on, chucklehead. You know what this is about. I know you're kind of a left libertarian, but, don't come up with this equal opportunity crap. Sure, 70% of the Democrats aren't worth the powder to blow them to hell, but it's not the U.S. government doing this to us. It is the Bush crime family and the Republican Party. And the reason he brought that up is because the U.S. dollar collapsed to an all-time record low against the euro yesterday. Jesus God. What is it now? 1.6 euros to the dollar, or do I have that backwards? Is it, it's $1.60 per euro. That's the lowest since the euro came into being almost 10 years ago. Wow. The U.S. dollar also hit a 25-euro low against the Australian dollar. I don't know what the hell has happened with the Canadian dollar. Canadian dollar just eats our lunch now. I can remember going to Canada with American dollars, 10 years ago. And, you could almost buy a new car for what in the United States you could buy a pair of shoes for. Okay, it wasn't quite like that. But Jesse Ventura says,
to me, it's clear there's a war on the middle class in America today being waged by our own government. They're out to destroy what was the American dream, and the American dream was a middle class. The dollar has fallen through the floor. There's half a dozen countries now that have a higher value and more than that than us. He was on the Alex Jones show when he said all this. He said, it's the exact two things that I've been harping on for the past 2 months and a half. We must do something about the $9 trillion plus of debt we owe throughout the world. It's a war on the middle class being waged. They're out to destroy what was the American dream. That's true. Ventura is, I always liked Jesse Ventura. I thought he was, kind of wacko from all the times he got kicked in the head. But so what? I would take one Jesse Ventura before I would take 50 members of the Bush crime family. Don't email me now and tell me where Jesse was really a closet Nazi. Just let me have my illusions. Once in a while, you people drive me crazy sometimes. I appreciate the
the illumination that you provide the program. But I know Jesse Ventura is Jesse Ventura, but his statements on both Larry King and on Prison Planet, Paul. What am I talking about here? Jesus, God, you people have got me so upset now. I can't. On the Alex Jones show, the whole thing was quoted by Paul Joseph Watson on Prison Planet. But Jesse's points are certainly well grounded in basic reality, the truth. I don't know why the NASCAR crowd and the professional wrestling crowd and all the white people out there who are going to vote for John McCain because, well, he's not a colored man. I wonder why they don't understand what Jesse's trying to say. I know why they don't understand it when I say it, but that's Jesse Ventura, you skinheads. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 25 before the hour. Oh, and regarding the Indy Mac situation, the illegitimate child of Freddie Mac and Indy Mac, second largest bank failure in U.S. history. Got an email here from Susie out in L.A., or Suzanne, I should say. FDIC officials said IndyMac has about $1 billion in potentially uninsured deposits. Oh, my God. Held by 10,000 depositors. Now, if you know how FDIC works, first of all, it doesn't guarantee, it's not a guarantee for you. It's a guarantee for the bank. Do you understand that? Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has nothing to do with you. You may benefit, but this is to ensure that the banks don't go belly up. Remember, when all this stuff was put in place by those goddamn liberals back during the Roosevelt years, it was not designed to protect people. It was designed to protect banks so that we wouldn't have the same kind of bank failure that we had during the Great Depression. Anyway, I digress. So, FDIC guarantees accounts up to $100,000. Now, that translates into the individuals who have up to $100,000 in an account. I wonder what that feels like. Woo! Their money's protected. But if you have, say, according to the, is this from Pasadena Star News newspaper, individuals with more than $100,000 in one or more accounts will not be insured beyond the FDIC cap. Although the FDIC says it will return to account holders half of their funds that aren't insured. Well, now that's a good deal. Right? Huh? During the Depression, what were people getting? 10 cents on the dollar? Hey, looky here! Half! According to the newspaper, that means if an individual has $180,000 in one or more IndyMac accounts, they would be insured for $100,000 of that amount, but could also get half of the $80,000 in uninsured funds, bringing the total to $140,000. And then it adds, any additional recovery of funds would depend on the sale of IndyMac assets. Oh, my God. Now, I love this part. FDIC spokesperson David Barr said, now, customers who have loans with IndyMac Federal Bank should continue to make payments as usual.
He added that the terms of loans won't change because bank customers contractually agreed to their promissory notes with a failed institution. No, 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 no. See? See? Do you get this? You know, screw you. You got a loan at this bank that no longer exists except for the fact of tax dollars holding it up. You have a loan here? Pay it! And pay it on time, schmuck, or else you pay that 8% late fee. What the hell? We're not in the business to cut you any slack, so the bank failed. So what? So you owe 20 grand on a loan? Pay it, huh? You had 200 grand in here? Well, guess what, sucker? But make sure you make your loan payment.
And then Suzanne closes by saying, so now if you'll excuse me, Mike, I'm going to crank up It's a Wonderful Life. What? You never heard of Christmas in July? Oh, my God. It just doesn't stop, does it? Huh? Do you have any doubts? Do you have any doubts? Hey, you right-wingers. Hey, you dumb sacks of mucus walking around out there going to vote for McCain again. I'm going to vote for McCain. I love Republicans because you know why? Because they won't let the queers get married, and they're patriotic. You people are insane to begin with, but what do you think of this? Huh? What do you think of this little number? Now, see, this is happening. It's a shock to you because most of you right-wing nutballs are about 50, which means you weren't around during the Depression. The Depression, that's what they call it, the Depression. So now all of a sudden you find out that the American banking system is not worth the snot to blow it to hell. Do you understand what's going on here, Mr. and Mrs. Right-Winger? Do you understand? Huh? You know, those of us who still work for a living, who don't depend on unearned income, we get it. We get it real clear. Do you get it, Mr. Right-Winger, Mr. Thieving Republican? The only reason you've been able to steal what you've been able to steal is because of the system set up by Democrats over the past 70 years. It was not designed to facilitate your stealing, but you sneaky bastards, figured out ways to do it with your lies and your deception, and you're passing this law and that law and bank consolidation and yada, yada, yada. Well, guess what? Who was the genius that said it? What goes around comes around. It's going to come back and bite you on the ass. Now, those of us who are still working for a living, we're going to feel it first. We always do. And if we feel it bad enough, then we rise up and cut your throats, very simply. And then we start all over again. And those of us who feel the force of the collapse first, understanding that it's people like you that brought the collapse, we have no problem in hauling out the guillotine. We really don't. As a matter of fact, it's great fun to watch your heads lop off.
Well, a little too graphic. Oh, okay. Dial it back a bit. All right. It's not the U.S. government that's out to destroy the middle class, Jesse. It's the Republican Party and right-wingers. Talk about people who are willing to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. You know, if people played, okay, not completely by the rules, but within 10% of a violation of the rules, if you right-wingers just did that, you know, if you stole a little here and cheated a little there and lied a little over here, you know, we could survive that. The system is plastic enough to survive that. But you greedy bastards, you're not happy unless you get everything. You're not happy. You're the kind of people who sit around at Sunday chicken dinner, and after you've eaten on the drumstick, you bite off the knob on the end of that sucker and you suck the bone dry. I've seen you. You're not happy until you suck out every last trace of life. I've seen you. Why can't you people just steal a little, cheat a little? This story that ABC, Brian Ross, is reporting about UBS and this other private bank run by some goddamn king over Liechtenstein or Switzerland or one of those little toy fake countries that really don't exist except as tax havens.
This story now, I hear on ABC tonight, the number of American depositors who've been screwing the Treasury out of, get this, at least, that's what Brian Ross said, $100 billion in tax dollars. God damn, that'll fund another war. The number of Americans involved in this tax scam now is approaching 1,000. You filthy pigs. Why can't you just steal a little, take a little? You know, we in the working class or the middle class, we understand it's your game. But in sucking it dry the way you have for the past 7 years, don't you understand? You're going to collapse the whole goddamn system. Yeah, we may wind up out in the street. We may not be able to drive our cars. We may not be able to buy food. But the day will come when we'll come for your asses. We really will. I mean, that is a given. And there ain't enough security fencing, and there ain't enough weaponry for you people to defend, to hide behind. There just isn't. There just isn't. We're sick of this, you know? Those of us who work for a living are so sick of this over and over again. You did it to us in the 80s, you did it to us in the 90s, and you're doing it to us now. Talk about the new Gilded Age. We know who you are. We really do. And we know how you cheat and sneak and lie. And we know how you won't do a goddamn thing to defend this country against anything. You're takers, you're snakes. You grab and snatch everything you can get your filthy, bony hands on. Well, here's a warning from a third-rate radio talk show host, pal and palette. You better stop. You better stop. Because there is a point of no return. Look at the history of any country. There is a point of no return. And when you go past that point, all hell breaks loose. Yeah, I'm pissed off. I'm really pissed off. Every time I turn on the damn television, and I try not to do it, every time I go to the internet for news, I see another example of how the super rich, that top 1-2%, just continues to jam it into our body orifices and break it off, and I'm getting goddamn sick of it.
It's hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, a first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Of his honor and his glory, the people would sing.
It's about 9 before the hour. You want to do some phone calls tonight instead of just nonstop wall-to-wall Malloy ranting? All right. We coming up next hour, though, we are going to have Bridget's Talking Stick Circle. And if you don't know what that is, then hip yourself up a little bit. You know, we have a moment with Bob, and we have Bridget's talking stick circles. So that's coming up. And also, former German U-boat commander Wolf Blitzer interviews Jane Meyer, the author of this book, The Dark Side. And we stole this from, I don't know, where do we steal it from? YouTube or from Think Progress or Raw Story? I don't know. We stole it from somewhere, so we're going to replay it. And then see if CNN gets their bloomers in a wad about that. I don't think they will. Got time to squeeze in? Yeah, let's squeeze one in here. Starting with Isaac, who is calling from Seattle. Isaac, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's an honor to speak with you. And I just wanted to bring up a quick theory that I had about 9/11. I mean, get your take on 9/11. Did you think it was an inside job? Or?
You know, I've covered that so many times, and I'll continue to cover it, but not now. Jesus Christ. I mean, it would take me an hour just to answer the most basic question you have. Sure, I think it was an inside job. Absolutely. To what extent? I don't know. I have no idea. Nobody knows. But I damn sure don't buy the official story. I'm not saying that 19 hijackers, 15 of whom were Saudis, didn't come to this country and blow the living hell out of everything. I'm not saying that didn't happen. I know there are some on the 9/11 Truth Squad people who will say that, but no, I don't go that far. I think the Bush crime family allowed this to happen. They either what's the acronym LIHOP or MIHOP? Let it happen on purpose or made it happen on purpose. And I don't know, but there's a hell of a lot more than just a building collapsing, three buildings collapse because two airplanes strike above the 100th floor or whatever the hell the story is. So, you know, not to try to broom you off the program, Isaac, but no, I don't want to talk about that tonight. We talk about that frequently. Haven't done it for a while, I admit, and I said a month or so ago that I was going to bring this up periodically, and I will. It's just right now I don't know exactly what to bring up about it. And because so much of it has been covered, I've made my position real clear. I'm not one of these liberals who says, oh, well, yeah, that's what happened. Don't even go there. Don't question. Don't, you know, no, that's not me. That's not me. I'm still trying to deal with the Kennedy assassination. Are you kidding me? They're all lies. And I've said it before, any administration that lies into a war, lies us into a recession or a depression, lies us into everything these rotten bastards have lied us into, will damn sure lie about what appears to be a terrorist attack on the United States. There is no doubt in my mind. And I'll tell you one more thing, Isaac, I am waiting for the day. And on this day, I will gladly sit down, tie a bib around my chin and eat crow. On the day that some enterprising son of a bitch from somewhere on earth, either in government or out of government, either in the truth movement or not in the truth movement, shows me a picture of that jetliner right before it slammed into the Pentagon. Now, there's something like 200-300 cameras, 20-30, I don't know. And nobody can produce a photograph. Nobody. So the day that somebody produces that photograph, that'll be the day. And I'm not talking about some Photoshop CIA, NSA crap. I mean something taken off of one of those 40 or 50 or 30, whatever the hell the number was, video cameras that surround the Pentagon. For God's sake, it's the nerve center of the greatest war-making death machine in the history of the human race. And nobody can produce a videotape that shows an airliner slamming into it. Give me a break. I hope that answers your question, Isaac. All right, we have a break coming here. So is it now? Oh, we have another minute. Oh, we have Jesus, God, I get so. All right, Dave. Dave's calling from Salt Lake City, listening to on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Dave.
And hey, look, I got to give you a piece of my mind today. You're really going off on a tangent. You're painting the world or our country like it's on the verge of the Great Depression and the apocalypse all at once. And
not happening in your world, is it, Dave?
No, you know what?
What do you do for a living, Dave?
Let me give you a
No, what do you do story. For what do you do for a living, Dave?
I'm in banking.
You're in banking?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch, and you got the nerve to call this program? What do you do in banking? How many people have you foreclosed on today, Dave?
You know what? You're trying to dismiss me before.
No, I'm not. I'm asking you a simple question. I'm just asking you a question, Dave. How many people have you foreclosed on today?
Zero. I'm in credit card.
Zero. You're in credit card. Holy God. You're a real vulture then. I'll tell you what, Dave. Let me put you on hold. See if you hang around until after the break. If you do, I haven't talked to a vulture in a long time. By God, I want to talk to old Dave here. What did he say? He's in the credit card business at a bank? Oh, jumping Jehoshaphat. All right, stick around, Dave, in Salt Lake City. He says it's not that bad out here. Well, I guess in the credit card business it wouldn't be. But I'll tell you what, Dave, it's soon going to be. Let's see if you stick around, Dave. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back to the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. Phone number here is 800-989-1480 if you'd like to join in. Now, right before the break, we were talking with Dave in Salt Lake City, who is a banker, and he wanted to tell us it's not that bad out there. And I think you started to accuse me of being a Cassandra and talk about all kinds of bad things that don't exist, right?
Well, I just don't think the sky's falling. You know, it's not that bad. And I don't understand why you call me a vulture, like you don't keep your money in a bank or a bank didn't help you mortgage your house.
I don't.
Or you've never used a bank.
No, I used to use banks, Dave, if you want the truth. Now, don't interrupt me. Every time I get one of you folks on, you show that you weren't brought up right. Now, just be good, and we'll have a nice conversation here. I stopped using banks when I realized how rapacious and evil they were. My house is financed through a credit union. I do all my bill paying, my credit cards are through a credit union, with the exception of American Express. So, no, I will have nothing to do with banks. I learned my lesson, and I know how vile and filthy they are. Banks are not in the business to help people buy houses or have credit cards or establish credit. They're in the business to make money off of money. And do you know the Bible says you're not supposed to do that?
Yeah, you know, every business is in business to make
did
money.
Did you know that, Dave? That the Bible says that...
I don't know that it does or it doesn't.
Well, no, take my word for it, because you don't have any choice. But when you go to churches, do you go to church?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't. Okay. Well, if you're not a Christian, then.
I'm not a Christian, no. You're
halfway home with me, then. I thought you were one of these right-wing Christians. Are you a Mormon?
No. I am not a Mormon. I am not a Christian.
Oh, okay. But you're a banker, and that immediately. All right. Now let me tell you, when we were on hold there, in that short period of time, three people emailed in about your first comments. Here's one from Prairie 2 that says, "Ask Dave how often he's cut people's credit limit lately, especially people who start buying groceries on their card or shift from high-end stores to Walmart." Okay. How many people's credit have you cut lately?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean,
well, you're a smart man, Dave. Come on, you're working.
That's not a number I would have off the top of my head.
Okay, well, just take a guess. 1,000?
I honestly don't know.
500.
I can't take a guess. I would love to take a guess.
100. Any?
I'm not dodging the question, man. I really
Oh, well, of course you're. What do you mean you're not dodging the question? You're dancing like a drop of water on a hot pancake griddle. How many people's credit limit have you cut lately?
I don't know the answer.
Okay, well, then, all right, in answering that you don't know, that means it must have been an enormous damn amount, that you can't even remember.
No, come on. That's
okay,
not...
all right, no, wait, here's another one. Here's another one. This is from Bert and Linda, who write,
right,
Mike, my wife Linda and I live in Smithfield, Utah, and listen to you on Nova, Nova M via computer. Things are bad here in Utah. It's just that this place is full of Daves who wear blinders, can't think for themselves, and never question those in charge. Message for Dave. Shut the hell up. The state of the state of Utah is a big enough embarrassment without your help. Okay,
I would love to respond to that. I would love to.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, at 20 years old, I started out in the lower middle class, and I'm now 40, and I worked my way up to the upper middle class, and I did it because I'm motivated and I work hard.
I'll bet you're white, too.
Yeah, I'm white.
Okay.
But I'm also motivated and I work hard.
All right, but
that's what got to where I am.
But let me ask you something. Where would you be if there weren't a credit card business? Oh, never mind. Never mind. That's probably a trick question. Okay. Here's one more. This is from Jack. Good evening, Mike. If you could, ask your caller, Dave, if he knows the amount of people in America who are in dire straits and are using their credit cards to pay for just about everything just to stay alive, or the amount of people they project are going to default on their cards in the next few months.
Well, guess what? These people
Dave, wait a second. I'm not finished.
Okay.
Billions of dollars, Mike, signed Jack. Now, do you disagree with Jack?
Totally. Nobody forced them to put money on their card.
No. That's not what he said. Of course, nobody forces anybody to do anything. This is America. But you, being in the credit card business, you know that we have a negative savings rate. You know that this country is choking to death on credit card debt, and the next big collapse is going to be the credit card industry. Now, you know that, Dave. That's what motivated you to call tonight. You are about 3 inches away from total panic yourself, because you know that when the credit card industry collapses, your ass is going to wind up as a collector somewhere. You know that, don't you, Dave?
I know no such thing.
All right, here's another one. Hold on. What do you think of the Bush bankruptcy laws? You credit card bankers loved that one, didn't you? What do you think of that?
Well, that's a big question. Can you be more specific?
The fact that it's now much more difficult for individuals to file bankruptcy. They can no longer hide behind, what is it, Chapter 11, or was it Chapter 7 that wiped out debt? Which one was it?
Do I have a problem with people owning up to their obligations? No, I don't.
That's not the question. What do you think of the Bush bankruptcy laws?
I don't have a problem with
That's fine. What do you think about 24%, 28% interest rates? Do you think that's usury on these credit cards?
Here's what I think.
Baby steps,
I'm
going
to answer your question.
All right, baby steps. Do you think 24% to 28% interest rates on credit card debt is usury?
Okay, as a user of credit cards, do I like that? No.
No, that wasn't the question. Do you think it's usury?
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
28% is not usury? Holy jumping Jesus. Let me ask you something. When you're paying $4 a gallon for gas, and working class people you stepped on the backs of to climb to your precious upper middle class status have to pay on their credit cards, to pay 24% interest on top of that?
No, that's a different question.
Oh, it is, isn't it? All right, hold on. All right, now hold on, Dave. Hold on. Do you know where Ogden, Utah is?
Sure.
All right. Well, somebody named Scott has called in from Ogden, and he says it is that bad out there. So guess what? I'm going to bring Scott up. And Scott, say hi to Dave.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Say hi to Scott.
Hi, Scott. This is the most fun I've had on any talk show ever.
Yeah, I know. Don't try to butter me up. I still think you're a vulture. All right, Scott, what do you got to say to Dave?
What I have to say to Dave is, you know, I applaud his hard work. The only thing about, and I completely agree with you, Mr. Molloy, that the next large crisis is going to be the collapse of the credit card industry. People are not going to be able to pay their bills, and that's going to go down. It's really going to hurt the state of Utah, especially because we're in a service state, mostly service industries. We used to have iOmega. We used to have Autoliv, which provided good-paying jobs, but they were moved to Southern California and Mexico, and now most of the people are in – a lot of people are in banking or in collections. And the price – we're also in a right-to-work state, which means that, you know, they can fire you for basically anything if you wear the wrong, you know, color of shoes.
All right, now wait. Wait a second. Scott, I get the impression that you're going kind of negative on us here. You mean it's not that good out there?
You know, it's not. There are companies and that Prudential, they have a wholly owned subsidiary that I cannot remember the name of it. One of my really good friends at work who has an MBA is making probably about $40,000 a year with an MBA.
Right.
I cannot remember the name of the company, but they're a subsidiary of Prudential that they set up shop in Utah, because what they do is they'll hire people temporary. They'll hire, you know, 60 to 100 people, use them, and then they'll only keep three.
Right. Scott, let me interrupt. That's an old trick. It doesn't just happen in Utah. That has happened. You ought to live here in the South. Oh, Jesus. No, maybe you shouldn't. Let me ask you something. Let me go back to Dave. Scott, stay there.
Okay.
Dave, yep. Dave, what about this? Let me ask you something. Do you make a mortgage payment?
Sure.
Okay. What would you do if all of a sudden your mortgage payment tomorrow jumped, you know, not a horrendous amount, but say 20%, just for no reason? You got a notice from your mortgage company and said, look, now I'm just going to play with you here a little bit, Dave. Your mortgage payment is no longer $1,000. It's now $1,200 a month. What would you do?
Obviously, I'd be irritated.
Okay. What do you think of the idea that under applicable law, credit card companies have the right to change the terms of their agreement, including the APR and fees, at any time for any reason?
Nobody forced you to keep your
account. Nobody forced you. You right wingers always. I swear to God, it gets to the point, Dave, where you trip my gag reflex. You wouldn't like it if somebody jacked your price up 20%. But by God, nobody made anybody take that credit out, right?
Well, all right,
Dave.
Understand.
I'll tell you what. Let me put you, Dave, and Scott. I know Scott wants to. Wants to get another lick in or two here. Let me put you both on hold. We'll come back because we got to take a break here coming up real quick. And Dave, if nobody is forcing anybody to take these credit cards, what would you do if we tore them all up? You know, cut them into pieces. Man, you'd have that job. That eventually would be outsourced to India, calling people up saying, now you owe this money. You spent this. Nobody forced you to do it. When you gonna pay your bill? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
When they tortured and scared you for 20-odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion.
Of successful welfare reform, we must turn to the problems of the working poor. These problems seem immune to our affluence.
God, don't you just want to, well, you know. All right, let's Let's bring Dave back up here. Scott apparently had to leave, so you're not going to be challenged here by Scott anymore, Dave. But let me quote something to you, okay?
Okay.
This is from, I don't know if you're familiar with the website SeekingAlpha.com. It's one of the leading business and investment sites on the internet. Headline is U.S. credit card industry moving into uncharted territory. I got some bad news for you, Dave. You're soon going to be unemployed. Now listen, here's what it says: the combination of slumping housing prices and rising unemployment risks putting the credit card industry into uncharted territory, according to Moody's. Credit card performance deteriorated further in the first quarter by several measures. Quote, but with the excess spread at near historic highs, most trusts appear to be well positioned to withstand a worsening credit environment, even if losses exceed former post-recession peaks. That said, Moody's outlined some disturbing trends in the sector in a special report that they linked to. The charge-off rate rose to 5.71% in the first quarter of 2008. That's up from 4.49, same period a year ago. This marks the fifth quarterly year-over-year increase in the charge-off rate between 12 consecutive quarters of improvement, yada, 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 yada. I'll tell you what, Scott, what can you do besides run a credit card stuff?
Yeah, okay, look. The fact that...
do you know how to pump gas?
That's very funny. Just because we've had a little rough squeeze for a while does not mean
the
sky is falling.
A little what?
A rough squeeze.
A rough squeeze?
That's right. And I'm
7 million people facing foreclosure, and you call that up to 12 million? You call that a rough squeeze?
You know what? Nobody told those people to sign those arms.
Okay? Oh, God! You're absolutely right. Nobody told them to sign those arms. Well, Ben Bernanke, do you know who that is?
No.
You don't know who Ben Bernanke is? Okay, well, then I guess there's no real reason to continue the conversation. He's head of the Federal Reserve. Do you know what the Federal Reserve is?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay, do you know who Henry Paulson is?
Yeah.
Who's he? Did he hang up?
Who's the Prime Minister of India?
He hung up. Dave hung up. I'll tell you what. All you people that always talk to me about hanging up on these suckers, guess what? One just hung up on me. He didn't know who Henry Paulson is, and he doesn't know who Ben Bernanke is, and everything's okay in Utah, and the credit card business is just hunky-dory. Dave, if you're still listening, listen, pal, seriously, no offense or anything, but you better polish up your resume a little bit there, because that's what we call it down here in the South. It's called a resume.
Oh, he can go work for the Libertarian Party. They'd love him.
They would love him. Libertarians would love him. But I'll tell you what, Dave, you better polish up your resume just a little bit, because you know what? You're sitting in a car, so to speak, that has no driver, and you're going downhill, and you're accelerating, and at the bottom of the hill is this enormous steel-encased brick wall. So be careful, dude.
But you know what, Mike? Nobody forced him to take that job.
Nobody did.
Nobody made him work for that bank.
Nobody did. He works in the credit card business. Well, I'll tell you what.
Nobody put a gun to his head and said, you got to work here.
Mike writes to Dave, I'm a bankruptcy attorney. My favorite part of the day is when I get to enter creditors on bankruptcy petitions with the stroke of my pen. I probably set up about $25,000 a week to be discharged. Also, Dave, 40 years ago, the interest rates and late fees you currently charge were illegal. How did they get legal? Bank lobbyists? Yeah! Loan sharking, that's what it is. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks are free. Now that ain't working. That's the way you do it. Let me tell you, damn guys ain't dumb. Maybe
25 before the hour. For a minute there, I thought Dave had cut the wires or something. You know, you never know. A couple more emails on the Dave call, and then we're going to move on. And because of the length of that, we may have to bump at least one of the things we're going to do tonight. If we do bump it, Bridget's Talking Stick Circle, we'll do it tomorrow night. But anyway, we'll see. Mike, Bert and Linda again. They're from Utah. Dave is a great example of, I got mine, screw you, too bad for you, I got mine. The front page of the Salt Lake Tribune today is about a bank collapse. The run on the bank, and the headline is, your bank next? So, is Dave's bank next? Ask Dave, at what rate would he say there is a usury fee? No limit. Dave and his elk feed at the public trough, and he is one of those who will vote for McCain, and he voted for Bush both times. And he probably thinks wiretapping is okay, and that we found those weapons of mass destruction, and that Iraq was responsible for 9/11, and the mortgage crisis was brought on by you, Malloy! He probably does, with all the negative. Mike, the attorney in Minneapolis, or is it St. Paul? I guess it's St. Paul, adds, Dave, what we have now in your industry is legalized loan sharking. If someone is desperate and or hungry and you give them credit, they'll use it, even knowing that they can't pay it back. For your industry to take advantage of these people when you could offer them reasonable loans, realistic loans, and still make millions, for your industry to take advantage of the least among us is reprehensible. Pray too. Ask Dave what his plan of action is next year when he gets laid off and unemployment is 30%, his house is worth 30% of what he paid for it, electricity is triple, gas is $9, and they're shooting looters. And Bridget writes for Dave, she says, try this one on the troll. You've taken a risk as an entrepreneur and started your own business. Then you hit this economy and sales are slow, so you have a little trouble getting your payments in on time. You have a credit card at 3.75%, payments around $175 a month. You're a few days late on two payments. On the first one, you're 3 days late, and the second one, you're 11 days late. And suddenly, your interest rate jumps to 34.9%. Payments come up to $750 a month. What the hell are you supposed to do except declare bankruptcy? How many people do you know, Dave, who can take that kind of an increase in their monthly payments overnight? Justify this one for me, Dave. It doesn't even have to make sense. It doesn't even make any sense for the credit card company that ends up with nothing. Yeah, that's right. It's what we were talking about before Dave called in. You know, at some point, the people who are ripping and tearing the system to shreds, and it's not you, Truth Seeker, and it's not me, but the people who are ripping the system to pieces, and in the process of allowing their greed to run rampant, you know, when the golden goose finally does die, what are you going to do? Well, I know what a lot of them are going to do. They're going to move to Dubai. Have you been following the construction of some of these places in the country of Dubai? Are you aware of what's being built in Dubai for this planet's super, uber, mega wealthy? Huh? You haven't? Just go to Google, go to ask.com, go to one of the search engines, and just type in Dubai. See if you can pick up a slideshow and take a look.
You know, it's sort of the same evolutionary question I've had about viruses for a long time that's always puzzled me. If the ultimate end result of a viral infection for the virus to be successful is it kills its host and then it dies, much like the banking industry, then what good is it for the virus?
Right.
Where is the survival mechanism in that evolutionary chain? Maybe I should just switch to creation and get it over with and just, you know, believe in talking snakes and cloud beings. And But... you see what I mean? It's like
sure.
The banking industry. If it eats its own and it kills it and then it dies because it has nothing left to feed on, then how has it survived successfully?
Right.
To pass on its genetic nightmare into future generations of unsuspecting middle-class Americans.
These are heavy questions for 10:39 in the evening Eastern time. Heavy questions indeed, Miss Bay. former German U-boat commander. We got time for this? Yeah, we got time. Wolf Blitzer on CNN interviewing Jane Mayer, who is a writer for New Yorker, and I believe Miss Mayer worked for New York Times, yada, yada. She has a book out called The Dark Side, and this little bit of sound deserves a listen, since most of us did not hear it on the first go-around on CNN. Here you go.
They've been controversial from day one. Now there's word Bush administration policies toward terror suspects could expose top officials to actual war crimes charges.
Yeah!
The New Yorker magazine correspondent Jane Mayer writes about that and much more in her brand new book, already a major bestseller, The Dark Side. Jane is here in the Situation Room. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
These are serious allegations. War crimes charges potentially could be leveled against top administration officials. You name a lot of names in your book. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's more of a political question than a legal question, really. It's a question of whether there's a political appetite for this. There are Democrats on the Hill who are calling for these kinds of hearings and trials. I don't really know. I mean,
but one reviewer wrote about your book. The evidence in there would suggest that top administration officials who were in charge of authorizing what you believe was torture, and many others believe was torture, they should avoid traveling to several Western European countries because they could be arrested for war crimes. Well, name names. Who was responsible for what you would consider to be violations of the Geneva Conventions and American law?
Well, I mean, in fact, the whole top of the administration, I mean, the president, the vice president, David Addington.
Who's the chief of staff for the vice president?
Donald Rumsfeld, the secretary of defense. Doug Feith was up on the Hill today. He was the number three at the Pentagon. There's a whole slew of people who, what the book makes clear, really, is that this wasn't the action of some kind of bad, rotten apples on the bottom of the barrel, that, as people were saying in Abu Ghraib. This is a program that was put into place by the top of our government to use the toughest possible terms possible to get information.
The CIA issued a statement on Friday when your book actually started, you know, filtering out details, among other things, saying this: the interrogation methods used to question detainees have been lawful, safe, and effective. The program has yielded valuable information that has helped the United States and other countries save lives and disrupt terrorist operations.
Right. It's very hard to tell completely because we haven't had access to all of the facts, but I can tell you the CIA has said that its program was not only safe but also very careful. They ended up renditioning, that is, kidnapping people who were completely innocent and holding them for 154 days in a dungeon in Afghanistan before they let him out. They had a pretty good idea. I tell the story in this book. They had a pretty good idea that he was innocent from the start, but they just didn't know what to do about it exactly. They had kind of a bad feeling about it, but they just held him there. There were also people, there was somebody who was interrogated to death by the CIA who died in what the coroner said was like an asphyxiation that came from being crucified. I mean, we've got some situations that have taken place in this country where the records are just coming out. I did my best to piece it together. I'm sure there were some triumphs, too. This is, you know, going to be a mixed picture. But,
well, let me ask you, because when you say crucified, actually nailed to a cross? Is
not
that
nailed, but hanging from his arms in such a way that it made it impossible for him to breathe. Yeah. His name was Jamadi. Yeah.
Here's a quote from The Dark Side, your new book. Referring to Abu Zubaydah, one of the terror suspects picked up. Abu Zubaydah's hard time began when he was locked into the tiny coffin for hours on end, which he described as excruciatingly painful. It was too small for him to stand or stretch out, so small he said he had to double up his limbs in a fetal position. And he later started making up stuff just to avoid being interrogated along these lines.
Well, that's part of the problem, which is the question is, did we get good intelligence out of this or not? And there's ample reason to believe that we got a mixed record. One of the top people at the CIA said to me, 90% of what we got was crap. So it's not necessarily a success story all the way around.
In describing specifically the vice president, Dick Cheney, and his top aides, including David Addington, you write this, and these are strong words. As part of that process in which they authorized this kind of extreme interrogation techniques, as some would describe them, for the first time in history, the United States sanctioned government officials to physically and psychologically torment U.S.-held captives, making torture the official law of the land in all but name. Now, you don't use those words easily.
Well, I don't. You know, I think torture's become kind of a semantic game, basically. But take a look at the people in the administration themselves who talk about it. Richard Armitage, who served 3 combat duties in Vietnam. He said, I'm embarrassed we're even having this conversation. Waterboarding, of course, is torture. But Tom Ridge, the former Homeland Security Secretary, said, of course it's torture. Mike McConnell, who is currently the head of National Intelligence for us, said, if it was done to me, I'd think it was torture. It was sort of a silly game in some ways. And basically, whether it was torture or not, may not even...
But some will argue, as you know, that in the environment after 9/11, you know, say, you know what, we just lost 3,000 Americans. You got to do what you got to do. Right. And you've heard that argument.
And I understand it, and I actually am very sympathetic to it. The question is, 7 years later, do we need to keep doing the same thing? And can we take maybe a rational look and see, is this what we want our country to become, or are we better than this? And a lot of, it's not really just, this is not a book of opinion. It's a reported book, and it tells the stories of a lot of people, including Republican lawyers, military men, FBI guys, who basically said, there's a more honorable way to win the war on terror.
You've done amazing, amazing reporting in this book. It's not just some sort of opinion piece.
No, it's not.
You've gone out there and done real reporting. Jane Mayer is the author of The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Wolf. Great to be with you.
Gosh, Wolf. I'm shocked. We'll be right back.
Nation is committed to dealing with poverty. First, let me make it very clear, poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill.
Jesus Christ. All right, back to your phone calls. We have an open line, by the way. The number is 800-989. Never mind. Len is calling from New York, listening via the internet. Len, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Good
evening. Hey, Len.
You know, I was listening to you, I think, yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. And someone was calling and trying to understand what was going on with the price of oil and the economy. And then, of course, I just heard your conversation a little while before with our favorite banker.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It makes me want to close all my accounts and put them in his bank.
Yeah. Well, the guy was honestly a banker, and he didn't know who Bernanke and Paulson are.
I know.
Then this is indicative of everything else that's going on in the U.S.
Yeah, I think so.
The total ignorance. But, you know, I'm an accountant, but I also sit around speculating on not so much oil, but some gold and Canadian dollars and silver these days.
Mm-hmm.
On the internet, and it's amazing how few people actually do understand what's going on. And you know, they're blaming speculators. You know, that was the favorite thing to blame, is people speculating.
Right.
But the evidence that it's not speculators it's just plain inflation. There's two basic points of evidence. If it was speculators, then on the day that everybody is, you know, delivering oil,
mm-hmm,
then the price would drop because nobody would want it at that price. But the price doesn't drop, and it stays up there. So it's inflation. The other evidence is
My understanding of the speculator aspect is that with the Iraqis demanding things now that the Bush administration is not willing to give where it concerns Iraq's oil, with the possibility, at least the talk of the possibility of an attack on Iran, what the speculators are speculating about is a halt or a massive slowdown in the flow of oil. I think we all understand that if there's any attack on Iran, the Straits of Hormuz will become almost instantly impassable. The Saudis may get pissed off, and not that they, you know, entertain any great feelings with the Iranians, but the Saudis may get pissed off to the point where they start withholding. So I think, is it not true that that's what the speculators are speculating about?
Well, yes and no. I agree, but really, there are a few different things going on. Number one is an absolute increase in demand because of India, China, and other countries that are just demanding more oil. And number two is what you're saying, that some of that addition is, and I estimated personally, in my estimation is somewhere between 20, 30, 40, I think probably closer to $20 or $30 has been a speculation, which is what you would do. In other words, if you lived in a place where you knew there were blackouts all the time, you would be willing to pay 20% more for candles to make sure you had them around in case you needed them every day and you didn't have any for the next 6 months. So people are willing to pay $20 to $30 more a barrel on the possibility that tomorrow it might be up, you know, by $150.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. But then that doesn't explain the increase in the price of rice from 4 cents a pound to 24 cents a pound, and wheat from $3 a bushel to $13 a bushel.
Mm-hmm.
This is inflation. This is all laid on the doorstep of three men primarily: Ronald Reagan, Alan Greenspan, and George Bush. And basically, Reagan came up with the story. Greenspan fed the narrative, and he fed it in the worst way. I mean, the irony of them talking about buying up stock in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae. Greenspan, when he was testifying in 2001 about why the tax cuts aren't a bad idea when Bush was pushing them, was saying his biggest concern, because there was suddenly surpluses, his biggest concern was that there'd be so much money coming into the government that they'd pay off all the debt, and they'd have to start going out and buying private assets. They wouldn't know what to do with all the money.
Right.
And then he fed in, like he would sit back when they said, well, you know, in 2003, I mean, we already have deficits. Do you think the dividend and capital gains cuts would be, you know, wouldn't be reckless? And, you know, as long as they're offset, you know, he was just sitting back and letting all this happen. Of course, you know, that's the biggest difference between now and 100 years from ago.
Mm-hmm.
100 years ago, people, you know, at the top were willing to rip off everyone, but they weren't doing it necessarily to the detriment of the country by going out and borrowing it from. We couldn't have gotten this far if we weren't America.
Well, that I think, Len, is like the bottom line of what you're saying. The references to other times in our history where things were bad economically don't hold up when you consider the debt that the Bush crime family, well, starting with Reagan, as you pointed out, the debt that's been accrued to this country because of mismanagement of the economy. Len, got to leave it there. Thanks. We'll be back after the break. If you want to get on board tonight, now's the time to do it. 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
What? Read, right.
Welcome back, Truth Seekers. Malloy here. 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio Network. Am I supposed to start talking yet about the event coming up in Seattle on the 16th of August at the Civic Center? That is going to be a blowout. Good God, do you see who they've got lined up? I just feel great to be included, but Stephanie Miller, Sam Cedar, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, me, there's another, who am I forgetting? Ron Reagan will be there to MC it. Who did I leave off? No. Let's see, there are 3 women and 3 men. Stephanie. Oh, Rachel Maddow. And it's 6 p.m. Seattle time, 6 to 9, on Saturday night, the 16th of August. When KPTK does this in Seattle, this will be the 3rd one that I've been involved in. It is usually one hell of an event. I mean, it really is. It just, it's the most fun I've had with my clothes on in, I can't tell you how long, the other 2 years we've done this. So coming up this, the 16th of August, a month from today, we'll probably be doing some more promo stuff for it as the date approaches. But if you're thinking about getting tickets, I'm sure KPTK has been advertising this. I know they sent out a press release. But if you want to have one hell of an evening, can you imagine this crew on stage? Maddow, Randy Rhodes, Stephanie, Cedar, Hartman, me, and Ron Reagan. Can you imagine what this is going to be like? Jesus God, I'm going to bring one of those whoopee cushions and water balloons. It's going to be that kind of a night, I'm telling you. I'm looking forward to this one. This is going to be just outrageous fun. And again, to our affiliate in Seattle, thanks for the invitation. I wouldn't miss this for anything. All right, back to this program. Ron is calling from Ambler, PA, listening on the internet. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
This may have been a mistake to call on.
What's a mistake?
I just feel like I'm so wrapped around the axles of what's going on and with the economy. I mean, after listening to Dave, it's this feeling I get when I'm like coming home from work on the train and I'm watching people. And this afternoon there was a guy, I had the New York Times out, and he had the financial page open, and there was a picture of Paulson and Bernanke, you know, talking about what's going on. And I was looking around at the people on the train, and I'm like going, they don't even seem to be really like cued in.
I know what you mean. Sure.
And it's, I don't think it's like real for people. I mean, you know, it's real for some people more than others. Obviously, like, you know, someone like Dave, I mean, he can live in some sort of alternate universe where he thinks that these things that affect us, we people, aren't going to, you know, affect him. But yeah, it's just astounding to me. And I don't know. I that's why I said it might be a mistake to call, because I just feel like I'm so, I don't know how to articulate what I'm feeling anymore.
Well, I think it's getting more and more difficult for all of us. This has been a silent killer. I mean, 6-7 years ago, this Bush crime family was handed. You know, people can say what they want about Clinton. God knows I have, but they were handed an economy that had things been just left alone, we would not be in this situation. And the first thing the Bush thugs did was to start their snatching and grabbing, their thievery, their out and out outlaw activities, not just to kill people in the Middle East, but to steal America blind. So, it's difficult to find the kind of language to use And I think that's the problem you're having. I know it's the problem I'm having. It's what a lot of people, we're kind of in a state of, not the kind of shock when you come home and find your house is on fire, but the kind of shock when you know this disaster is just creeping up very slowly. It's kind of like the frog in the beaker, and if you drop the frog in a beaker of boiling water, the frog's going to die immediately. But if you slowly raise the temperature, the frog never realized what the hell is going on until it's too late. If you drop frog in a beaker of boiling water, he'll try to jump out. But
I guess the metaphor.
Right. So here we are, and so many of us don't have the frame or the language to use to describe this.
Well, it's really confusing to me. I'm ready to go. I'm emotionally I'm ready to go, and I'm like going, okay, where are the rest of you? I mean, where is your courage? Do you have any sense of what we're losing? And are you so wrapped up in yourself that you wouldn't do what I guess the people who ever brought this whole thing into existence, what they sacrificed? Do you have any real sense of that? Have we been wrapped up in such phony patriotism for so long we don't even know what the real thing is anymore? I don't know. It's confusing to me. And I'm not talking about politics either. You know, I'm not talking about a political party because I've washed my hands of a whole lot of them. Especially after the H.R. 6304 vote, when they just basically killed the Fourth Amendment,
sure.
That isn't a wake-up call for people. I don't know what the hell it's going to take. But, yeah, so I won't chew up any more of your time. I just called because, it's like I listened to you sort of diligently in the middle of the night, and I'm like sort of just in a quandary at any given moment. And I'm heartbroken. I am heartbroken by this. And the arrogance of some people just to come on your radio show, like, what the heck is a guy, Dave, listening to you for? What, just to prove you wrong? Just to get on the radio? Just to, to shame us with his, superior insight into what the heck's happening in the world? My God, where's this compassion? What a snotty thing to do to call you like that. But that's just my opinion.
Well, looking at the emails that I got while the guy was on and immediately after he hung up because he didn't know who Bernanke or Paulson were.
I know, ridiculous, right?
That was just insane. I mean, that's insane. But the tone and attitude of the emails that I got, and I must have gotten about 30 of them, were in keeping with what you're saying.
Well, that's 30. I have 30 peers. Thanks for
there
writing.
There you go. There
folks.
You go. Well, there's an old rule. I don't know if it still applies in the age of email, but there used to be a rule in radio. If you get one letter, and of course they're referring to snail mail, you could assume that that letter represented 1,000 people. Now, I don't know if that holds true. That was the old rule of thumb in radio before the internet and emails and so on and so forth. But you got more than 30 peers, trust me. Listen, Ron, call in any time. Glad to hear from you, okay?
Thanks, Mike. Good night.
All right. Take care. Yeah, Ron's talking about a real problem. How in the hell do you, talk about this? There was a word came through here in Atlanta today that what auto company is it, Kathy, that's opening an auto manufacturing plant outside Chattanooga or in Chattanooga? It's foreign auto company, obviously, but it's going to result in the hiring of 2,000 people. Maybe Toyota, but I mean, this is the kind of stuff that depressed areas here in the South or any place in the country would kill for. I don't mean here in the South. Hell, the South has had a lot better than the Rust Belt, the Midwest. But this is the kind of stuff that cities and states kill for. Now, I don't know what the deal was, off stage, how much the city of Chattanooga had to give up in terms of tax relief and so on and so forth. But that was the first bright spot in economic news in Metro Atlanta in I don't know how long. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. We'll be right back.
conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Apparently it's Toyota that's opening the big factory in Chattanooga. It damn sure would not be an American auto company, would it? What a shame. What a horrible, horrible shame. You know, I'm not going to, you know, trip out on this, but I can remember going back to, 74, 75, 76, when the CAFE standards, so-called, were first suggested that the auto industry had to improve mileage back during the last gasoline crisis or shortage or whatever the hell it was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And how every single time that environmentally conscious people in the government or people in the government, yes, in the government, who said, look, this can't go on. Don't you folks in Detroit see what we see? You're going to lose your asses. You really are. You can't keep producing Hummers. You can't keep producing cars to get 9 miles to the gallon. You are going to have your market taken from you. And how many times did the dumb bastards that ran the auto industry, all of them, how many times did they say, oh, well, we can't do that. Oh, that's not what America wants. Oh, it would cost too much money to retool. We can't do that. And now look. Chrysler is owned by, is it Chrysler that's owned by some pissy equity company that couldn't care less about what happens? They just want to chop it up and sell off the pieces. General Motors is on the verge of bankruptcy. Don't even talk about Ford. So who's opening the plant in Chattanooga? It's going to hire 2,000 people. That means it'll have a ripple effect through that economy in Chattanooga that will affect 100,000 people, maybe more. Who is it? Toyota. Yeah. And why is that? Well, maybe it has something to do with back in the 70s when the Detroit auto behemoths were saying, we can't do that! Toyota and BMW and VW and Honda and all the rest of them were saying, we can. And the factory that Toyota is opening in Chattanooga is going to focus on the Prius. Just unbelievable, unbelievable stuff. It is just, I don't know, beyond sad. Lou is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Lou.
Are you having fun tonight, Mike Malloy?
I'm, I just poured a glass of wine, so the fun's going to stop here real quick.
Yeah, you were kind of mellow until the first guy called and asked you an all-encompassing question about conspiracy on 9/11. And then the banker called, and to recap, he was a banker who postulated that everything is okay, and that woke you up. So, you know, the other day, George Bush was on TV, and he said, hey, everything's okay. Everything's okay.
Sure.
You know, I want to remind everybody that Herbert Hoover said everything is okay.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Now, I'm going to pose my question. Because it's a question I've been wanting to ask for weeks or months, and I think tonight, I chose tonight because of the banker call to call you and pose this question. Then I'll get off.
Well, I'm just quivering with anticipation.
Oh boy, oh boy. You know, I know this guy asked about 9/11, and I'm not calling to ask about 9/11.
Right.
But I'm calling to ask about something as broad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it should become a new running subject you could address once in a while. I'm interested in hearing from you, you know, your comparison with what's been happening in this country. And we're essentially the same government or culture or society pretty much since World War II. You know, Kennedy got stubbed, and so now maybe Obama will inspire this next generation to really be dynamic, but that's not the point. If we don't become dynamic, we will fall like the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to compare our present government, society, world, to the Roman Empire.
Well, I think it'd be easier to compare it to the British Empire. It's much more recent. The British Empire was involved in what we're involved in. By the British Empire, I'm talking about the 17 and 1800s, clear up until they lost India. After World War II, the Brits lost damn near everything. And I think the more proper comparison would be the British, the so-called British Empire.
Why? Because they're still in existence?
Well, because they lost everything and they still exist, right? But they exist inside, you know, England, Scotland, and Wales. Their influence has been phenomenal. A little clutch of islands off the coast of Europe. And most of the people, not most of the people, but a huge percentage of the people on this planet speak their language and so
Mike,
on and so
first,
on.
The first thing this banker said, accused you of, was being apocalyptic. I'd rather prefer a comparison to the Roman Empire.
All right, well, let me see what I can do, Lou. We got to leave it there right now, though, because we got a break. I don't know if I'm smart enough to do that, but we'll see. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Molloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. As far as Lou's request about the comparison between the U.S. and Roman Empire, no, I can't. You know, can't do it on a radio program. Maybe Hartman can do it. Maybe somebody who is more educated than I am can do it. But there is a book. Or an article, Are We Rome, by Gary Kamiya, that you can find at salon.com. And the intro sentence is, hollowed out by arrogance, corruption, and a bloated military, the greatest empire the world has ever known fell, referring to Rome. Is America doomed to follow in its footsteps? And the book is Colin Murphy's Are We Rome? So if you want to... if you want to check that out, you can get it at Amazon.com, although I recommend you get it at your local bookseller. Are We Rome? Okay? All right. There you go, Lou. What else we got here? Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Omaha, listening on XM. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm a trucker, and I'm a lease trucker, which means I pay for my own fuel out of the money I earn.
Right.
And over the past few months, I've bumped into a lot of other truckers that have actually been pushed into the point of being homeless. They're indentured servants or slaves, if you will.
Mm.
They work hard every day, 11 to 14 hours a day. All they do is they pay their fuel, and diesel has taken all of their money. What is, I guess, the Democratic objective to lower fuel costs for us truckers? Listening on XM radio, we really want to know.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anything is going to be done regarding fuel costs with the plight of truckers in mind. It's just not going to happen because extrapolating from what you've said, you know, the Bush crime family really and the oil industry really doesn't they don't care what happens.
If I might just jump in for a second.
Sure.
Right now I'm getting 8 miles to the gallon. And when you do the math, that's the equivalent. And I'm 80,000 pounds. You compare that to an 8,000 pound SUV or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the equivalent of them getting 80 miles to the gallon.
Right.
So Kenworth and Freightliner, they have really, really done their homework in getting the maximum amount of mileage out of there. I mean, no one in their right mind can ever even dream of a SUV getting 80 miles to the gallon.
Right.
It's just not possible.
Right.
The Cat guys, my Caterpillar engine is what I drive with. It's a my hat's off to them.
Mm-hmm.
80,000 pounds at 8 miles to the gallon, that's stunning. The Prius doesn't even get that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people saying that the auto industry is asleep at the wheel, no, they're leading the way. Well, the diesel industry is. I just want to find somebody out there that will say, yes, we're going to go ahead and refine more diesel for you truckers. Three times this year I've gone to my fuel solution, which I get via satellite from my dispatch. And I arrive there and I say, okay, I need my ultra low sulfur diesel. And they say, well, we have no diesel. Come back tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. I need it now.
Right.
We've actually hit the limit of our ability to refine, pump, and deliver. We need somebody that just stands up for us truckers who bring you everything that you own, everything from your stock to the floorboards you're standing on came from my truck.
All right,
stand up and say, all right, we're going to refine it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I have certainly tried to, on this program, get out over the air the plight of truckers. But I have to say that on the basis that you're looking for some help or solution, it's simply not going to happen. I'll tell you what might be a good idea, because I don't think fuel prices are ever going to go down. And what might be a good idea would be to subsidize over-the-road truckers in the same manner that we have been subsidizing farmers in this country for the past, oh, I don't know, what, 100 years?
Oh, we get subsidized. It's our fuel. It's our...
I'm talking about price supports where it concerns kind of reverse price supports. The government always made sure that the farmer, the price of certain commodities would not fall below a certain level, especially if the farmer had his crops in a food bank and agreed to produce according to government guidelines. What I'm suggesting is something similar for truckers, that there is a subsidy for that is used for the cost of diesel fuel, because the price of diesel fuel is not going to go down. It really doesn't. I mean, it's great that the truck manufacturers have produced vehicles that get the kind of mileage you're saying for the weight that they're pulling. But that really, I mean, while that may be super efficient in the big picture where it concerns your wallet, it's still murder. So the solution is not more diesel fuel, because what that does is increase the profits to the companies that produce the diesel fuel. It's not going to help you. How's it going to help you?
But if you
have a subsidy on, what are you spending, $5 a gallon now for diesel?
With all my discounts and everything, and the bulk purchase from the fleet of 1,300 trucks, I'm paying around $4.30 a gallon, which is a little bit less than the national average.
Well, it's about 50 cents less than a national average, isn't it?
Right. But what I do is I plot where I'm going to fuel up. Ohio is extremely low. I fill up there. I'm pumping every.
Okay. Let me ask you, Mike.
Oh, sure.
What do you want as a trucker in the situation you're in? What do you want?
Just a second. What was your question?
What do you want? What is it that would help you? What do you want?
Basically, I need some stability in there. The market to kind of calm down a little bit. It's become a supply issue. There isn't enough diesel out there. And when you go to a station, some of the smaller ones in particular, and they say, I'm sorry, I have nothing for you today. And it's a smaller town, and there isn't an option.
Okay, part two of that question. Who controls the supply of diesel fuel and the availability of diesel fuel?
So that would come from the refinery. We've hit the max. I hear Mexico is building a few new refineries. That'll help.
Mike? All right. Call dropped. Mike, I'm sorry. I'm sure you can still hear us, but your call dropped. I'm not real clear on what Mike saw as a possible solution. The building of more refineries has been, it's my understanding, has been deliberately not done by the oil industry itself. Why should they? And that includes the diesel fuel industry. Why should they? They're making so much money now. The most obscene profits in the history of any industry are the profits being glommed up right now by the oil industry. So, it just, that's the point I was trying to make, not to sound like, you know, Simon Legree or some whip-cracking freak, but why should the oil companies produce more diesel fuel? Because they'll sell more? They really don't care. They don't need to sell more. And as far as supply and demand, as far as the Adam Smith invisible hand of the free market, that invisible hand was chopped off at the elbow about 40 or 50 years ago. We do not operate in a free market system. We do not operate on supply and demand. We don't operate on any of that anymore. That's an illusion. That was taught to me when I was in grade school 50 years ago. It no longer applies. It doesn't mean anything. Every single commodity, I don't care if it's food commodities or energy commodities or building material, it doesn't make any difference. It is all manipulated. Every single element of this so-called free market economy is manipulated by the people that control the assets. Period. End of story. So, Mike, I don't know what the answer would be. That's why I come up with a simplistic response, subsidies. Because you're right, everything is delivered by truck. But then, you know, I've talked about this before on this program. I don't know if if you're a regular listener or not. In other countries, when the truckers finally have enough of whatever it is, high tolls or high taxes or high fuel prices, they pull over and stop. Now, this always happens in France. French truck drivers are notorious for saying whatever the French equivalent of that word is. The French truckers will say it, and they'll just pull over, and they'll say to the government, do something, period. We'll move when you do something. We're not going to continue. So why don't American truckers do the same? Well, I know the quick answer. They can't afford to. You know, it's called slavery, or as you pointed out, indentured servitude, whatever you want to call it. But until there is some sort of resistance in some quarter of this country, somewhere on some level, where people say, no, goddammit, I've had enough. Until that happens, why do any of us think that anything is going to change? I don't care if you're relying on diesel fuel or groceries or a job or clean air to breathe. Until people say, no, no more. It's just going to continue. Thanks to everybody that wrote. It's not a Toyota building in Chattanooga, it's VW. Toyota is building in a Prius plant in Mississippi, and a plant originally planned to build large SUVs. It's going to be building the Priuses. But everybody from people in Chattanooga to New York City emailed, no, it's not Toyota in Chattanooga, it is VW in Chattanooga. Okay. Thanks to the crew tonight for all the assistance. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob, Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and, of course, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And we had to reschedule an element to the program now called Bridget's Talking Stick Circle. Come on. Cut with the smarmy remarks. Look it up. Do a Google on talking stick circle. We'll probably do it tomorrow night. All right, back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for having me on.
Sure.
You know what? I've been watching, you know, the mess, the crimes, the evil the Bush crime family's created.
Yeah.
I went down to the IndyMac Bank, and I see, you know, not like rich elite people, but non-speaking English people like Asians, Hispanics wanting to get their monies out of the bank, and they're like, you know, the hardworking decent people or even retired people,
mm-hmm.
and they're having a hard time. So I was wondering to myself, what can I do instead of reaching for box four and just going ballistic? What I did was, and what I'm doing right now, is that I went to my credit union.
Yeah.
I got applications, and I'm passing them out. And I'm explaining to people the difference between a bank and a credit union.
That's a great idea.
Because if the people pull their monies out, and my credit union, you know, teller told me that if they put it inside their mattress or in their freezer, it would be called freezing your assets, and it'll destroy the economy.
Mm.
So I'm telling people, don't do that. Put your money back into a credit union and explain to them how the interest rates on the checking and saving is a lot higher than a bank. And if see that you want to buy a home, the interest, you know, the rate to borrow money is a lot lower than a bank. And a lot of people are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, like I said earlier in the program tonight, you know, I became a credit union believer. I first joined a credit union in 1987. So, you know, this is not a new thing for me, but, as years went by and I saw what the banks were doing,
right,
to this economy and to just normal folks, you know, I get so sick of people saying in the banking industry, well, nobody told them they had to charge up their balance to $5,000. I mean, damn. You know, that is such a bogus argument to begin with. But, you know, after watching all this and especially in the past 3 years, looking at how the housing industry is right on the verge of total collapse, the way the banking industry is once again begging for a handout from the American taxpayer.
Right.
You know, you never hear of a credit union failure.
Exactly.
You know, SNLs, banks, you know, they get ripped off. People take advantage. People steal. They're thieves. They're lying sons of bitches. But it doesn't happen with credit unions.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I'm a credit union believer and have been for over 20 years. I don't know why anyone would deal with a bank.
Exactly. Yeah, and another thing is the obligation is to the customer, because banks' obligation is not to the customer, not to the people, but to the shareholders.
Sure.
Because the profits go to them.
Sure.
In turn, since a credit union is a not-for-profit, not non-profit, but a not-for-profit organization, the money goes back to the people, it goes to the community.
That's right.
And everyone makes out like bandits. So, you know, just telling everyone out there in Mike Malloy Land and KTLK everywhere, join a credit union. It's not hard. It's not really exclusive anymore.
Yeah.
And is it okay if I give, like, a website to, like, one credit union network, if it's okay with you?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sure, absolutely.
Oh, thank you. If you want to know more information about credit unions, this one network, and it's good everywhere in the United States, it's called CU, as a credit union, CUSWIRL.com. And with that credit network that I'm with, CUSWIRL.com, I could go to Atlanta and withdraw money or deposit money to a credit union without being penalized.
Right, right.
And people don't realize that.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, Tim. I can't think of any other way to go. I have financed just about everything I've ever owned that was big ticket item through a credit union, whether it was house, car, pickup truck. I've got a Visa card through my credit union. What else? Savings, a college fund. It just goes on and on. And I never even think a CD. I never even think about it. And when I pick up the New York Times or the Atlanta Journal-Constitution or whatever and read about the failures, read about the bailouts and the screaming and the gnashing of teeth and the rending of garments over this corrupt, filthy banking industry in this country. I mean, it's astonishing to me. Nobody seems to realize, and in 25 years of doing talk radio, I've had so many people write to me and tell me about the Federal Reserve is a ripoff, the entire banking industry is a ripoff, and, you know, I just give it like, yeah, you're right, okay, don't pay any attention. But it truly, truly is. I mean, it's horrifying. It's horrifying what these leeches and vultures have done. Ah! The SNL industry, when it was deregulated, that was the death knell. That was the knife to the throat to the SNL industry. It's a Wonderful Life died that day. The movie, you know. Never mind. Well, I hope you had fun tonight. And I hope you'll show up tomorrow night. All right? Thanks a lot for participating. However you did that, I do appreciate it. Take care. Do take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.